This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Pitch Talk with Olivia Cox and Rachel Downey.
Well, hello, good afternoon, and welcome to Pitch Talk. I'm Rachel Downey. And how are you, Olivia? You're Cox.
I'm good. I'm fiddling with my headphones, but I am really good. I'm very happy that it's Friday. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday. I'm trying to create a crowd. Do you see what I'm doing there?
Happy Friday. Hope you all had an amazing week, and I'm really looking forward to the weekend. We've got so much exciting news and sporting stuff coming up in the show, and of course, a really cool couple of guests.
Yes, we do. We've got a very, very busy show today, so we're just going to go straight into it. Should I go balls deep into football? I just did. Let's go balls deep very, very quickly into football. We'll obviously be covering the Olympics as well. We're going to be talking about the Six Nations. So much to talk about. The first thing I will chat about is Mahrez. Klopp has confirmed that Riyad Mahrez will miss a third successive game for Leicester City this weekend amid his ongoing dispute with the East Midlands club. Now, we spoke about this last week. Mahrez has been absent from training since Leicester turned down City's £65 million offer for the player and will now miss a side trip to Manchester City. I feel sorry for Mahrez. A close friend of the 26-year-old has been quoted saying the winger has been and is depressed after the move failed to materialise. Obviously, the Leicester player wanted to move to City. Mahrez handed in a transfer request, his second within the space of 6 months, at the end of January. So this is the player who, you know, doesn't want to play for his club anymore.
Yeah, we touched on this last week, didn't we? We said it was a bit of a love triangle going on, or a transfer triangle, I think, was the very catchy... term coined by Rachel Downey. It's a really tricky one because there are obviously more than one set of opinions involved in this, and where there may or may not have been slightly behind closed doors dealings, of course someone has to miss out, and unfortunately this is sport is very much a psychological game, and yep, I think we probably will start to see the impact this is going to have on players.
Yeah, it's, and you know, the teammates as well. I can imagine the teammates are probably annoyed with him for wanting to move.
Well, it's essentially desert. Yeah, exactly. It's abandonment.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much team bonding you do, you sort of see someone's true colours when they decide to stay or go. And I guess everyone, to a certain extent, must be playing a little bit of a game, because although you are part of a team, you come first. You know, it's look after number one.
It's your career, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a really tricky one, and it's something that we see mirrored across an awful lot of sports, but probably biggest in football.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's hear what Claude Puel, the Leicester City manager, said earlier on.
What can you tell us about the latest with Riyad Mahrez?
Another thing about the last time, Riyad will be not available for the Saturday game against Manchester City. Just this, and after, no news about him.
Has there been any progress in the talks between him and the club?
I think just I hope Riyad can get. He said right. And to come back with us and to hard work and to see for him the best way is to come back and to enjoy his football.
That's Claude Puel, Leicester City's manager, talking there about Riyad Mahrez. And we're going to stick with football. Obviously, tomorrow is North London derby, Tottenham v Arsenal, Spurs v the Gooners. I'm a big Spurs fan. It's brilliant. North London derby is something that everyone gets excited about. And I just want to say already the slanging matches are beginning. Arsene Wenger has fired a cheeky dig at Harry Kane and Dele Alli, saying English players are now the masters of diving ahead of tomorrow's North London derby. Tottenham manager Mauricio Pochettino said simulation is just a way to win matches. Olivia, let's talk about this. English are diving masters.
I think that's a bit of a naughty thing to say, first off. Diving is obviously not something anyone is proud of, and it's not something anyone is particularly going to hold their hands up to whilst they're doing it. I think this is a bit of scapegoating, really. It's thou doth protest too much, my friend. I'm not sure that really us English, mind you, I am biased, but I'm not convinced we're to blame.
No, I'm not.
I've seen some very fruity dives, I have to say, from non-English players. So back in your box, I think.
It does make me laugh when you do see some really good dives. I know Pep Guardiola has spoken about his team, City, being victims to the ones that are always being knocked down, are always, so on the opposite side of it, kind of being treated unfairly by other players. But then I suppose, let's be honest, City are too good, so we've got to try to destroy them somehow.
I don't know. I think this is, it's a vicious rumour mill, and everyone, it's a bit, it's just, it's pointing fingers and telling tales and a little bit of Chinese whispers, and I think they're all just as bad as each other, quite frankly.
Boom. Yeah, I like that. Did you like that? We should drop the mic then. Although it'd be quite hard to drop this mic.
It'd be very hard, but I'm sure I will drop something at some point in the show, so I'll try to time it at the opportune moment.
Yes.
Just good. For you.
Thanks. Oh, I feel the love. And very, very quickly, the last football story is Jay Rodriguez faces a minimum 5-match ban if found guilty after the FA charged him with racially abusing Brighton's Gerton Bong. The stunned West Brom striker immediately vowed to fight the charge and prove his innocence in court if necessary. Necessary, he said on Twitter, absolutely gutted and in disbelief at the situation I find myself in. I 100% deny the false allegation and will take the correct legal action. So once we find out more about that, we will let you know. Over to you, Olivia Cox.
Thanks, Rachel Downey. So following in the footsteps of every single bit of sporting news you've ever heard under the sun regarding football, let's talk Six Nations now. It is the second weekend of games for the 2018 season. And the Six Nations is a really closely contested tournament. Of course, the Six Nations include Ireland, England, France, Scotland, Wales. Have I missed someone out? Was that five? Was that six? I sort of forgot. It's a bit like when you're counting the seven dwarfs.
Yeah, did you do Italy?
Italy, who, of course, we do have an ex-Italy player coming in later. So let's definitely remember Italy. It is hotly contested and considered to be either England or Ireland's game. So it will be really interesting this weekend to see Ireland facing Italy. Of course, England did beat the Italians last week, but it wasn't that convincing a win. And some, there have definitely been some replacements, I think, as a result of that. So Eddie Jones has ignited the build-up to the English Six Nations clash with
Eddie
Wales.
Jones.
And he's piling the pressure on the inexperienced Rhys Patchell. So this is one of the Welsh players. And it almost feels like there's a bit of a slanging match going on now between the two managers. So we've got the manager of Wales who are saying that England need to up their game a little bit. And of course, Eddie has turned around and criticised one of their players. But we've had to replace some of our players. Joseph is replacing Ben Teo, who was really, really considered to be a bit of a favourite last week ahead of the game.
Spoke very highly about him as well.
Well, he'd come back from a bit of an injury and everyone was pretty relieved that actually he was going to be able to play. But he's being replaced. And also Danny Kerr is coming in at scrum half for the injured Ben Youngs. Now, I think that's going to be a really exciting game.
Now, you're talking about Danny Kerr. Let's listen to you interviewing Danny Kerr. I believe it was last week.
You had a huge Six Nations last year.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. Obviously, great that we won it. We nearly got the Grand Slam again, which would be amazing. And this year, the focus is to try and win it again and create some history and hopefully be the first team to win it 3 years in a row. But we know how tough it is. And when you've won it, every team wants to beat you. And there's no easy games in the Six Nations, which is why it's the best tournament to be involved in.
Yeah, it really is.
Danny Kerr talking to me ahead of the Six Nations tournament at the Nordoff Robins dinner back in January. Now, Danny is set to earn his record 78th cap for England against Wales on Saturday, and that will see him become England's most capped scrum half ever as they face Wales. However, he has said that he'll only celebrate the record if they beat their rivals on Saturday. What a guy. Doesn't that just make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside?
Yeah, I have a lot of respect, I think, is the right way to describe it for the England players. I really do. They do represent their team and country quite beautifully.
They do, although there is a bit of a controversy going on right now because the Wales head coach apparently had some slightly negative language to say against the referee's decision against a penalty which was given against Wales, and Eddie Jones has he's really gone off on one and said that he's pretty disappointed. He's going to be reporting it to World Rugby, and he is saying that he doesn't want the rugby game to go the way of some other games. I'm assuming here he's referencing football, where it is very much more vocal, shall we say, from the coaches?
Yes, that's putting it very, very loosely and very lightly, I'd say.
So it will be interesting to see how the two coaches get along. There doesn't seem to be much love lost between them. But that is this weekend. There is a huge number of matches on. Do make sure that you tune in to the coverage. I think it's on ITV this year.
Probably is.
I'm pretty sure.
We'll have a little check. We'll find out for you, Olivia.
We will.
And we'll move on to the 2018 Winter Olympics. It's finally here. The opening ceremony was about 11 o'clock, I think, today. How excited are you for the Winter Olympics?
Oh, so excited. I think it's quite a groundbreaking Olympics, actually, with all the controversy surrounding the Russian athletes. North and South Korea coming out together under the same united, unified flag, which is really historic.
It's incredible.
I mean, regardless of the fact that it's the Winter Olympics, regardless of the fact that it's a sporting event, it is a historic cultural event. So that's super exciting. Unfortunately, some of our British hopes have been slashed. We'll be talking a little bit more about this later on. Jenny Jones was out in South Korea and speaking to some of our favourites ahead of the games. And unfortunately, we're down a couple of people, but we've still got strong hopes.
Yeah, we are down a couple of people. It's the 23rd Winter Olympics, and it has started in Pyeongchang. And it's also set to be the coldest in history. I believe some of the winds, they said it was going to be minus 25.
I'd love to know how athletes prepare for that, because we hear a lot about sports people preparing for hot climates, you know, dry, humid, those sorts of things. I wonder
how
what you have to do.
Even prepare?
Are any athletes listening? Can you let us know?
Yes.
How do you prepare to get frozen? The coldest you've ever been.
Literally, how do you prepare to get frozen? Could you let us know? That'd be wonderful.
Answers on a postcard.
Team GB has sent a record 59 athletes to South Korea, three more than at Sochi 2014. And we are aiming for their most successful winter games with a medal target of 5 or more.
Yes, however, I would quite like to point out that something slightly alarming, which is causing a few ripples, is that New Zealand. I've got New Zealand on the brain. I'm afraid I'm going to New Zealand. The non-countried Russian athletes team who will...
The IOR, Olympic athletes from Russia.
That. they will apparently be the third largest team after the United States and Canada. Now, I don't know, Rachel. I'm not sure that is completely fair, because essentially... It's not. It's just giving it another name, isn't it?
Yeah. But basically, they had all their doping allegations dropped from... And so what happened was back in 2014, Sochi, a majority of the medals that were awarded to the Russians, they found out that basically the Russian team, the Russian doctors, were hand-in-hand within the doping allegations. So... the IOC banned Russia over evidence it ran a systematic state-sponsored doping program during those Winter Olympics in Sochi. So for the 2016 Summer Games in Rio, individual sporting governing bodies had to decide whether Russians could compete. This time, though, the IOC did impose a blanket ban on Russian athletes, but it also said those who proved they were clean would be allowed to compete as neutrals. And that's what's going on here. They're competing as neutrals under the OAR, the Olympic Athletes from Russia. It does seem very, very unfair.
It really does. And I think it slightly makes a mockery of what the Olympic Committee has been trying to achieve. Of course, there will be pressures coming from both sides. And it is not the only controversy in sport at the moment. There are many, many others. I think we've just got just enough time for me to drop this bombshell. There is big trouble as all of Japan's sumo wrestlers are to be questioned as the sport lurches into crisis. Now, this was on The Guardian this morning, and it says that an external panel will be quizzing 900 sumo figures after high-profile cases of violence and sexual harassment among members. Now, sumo wrestling is one of those sports that you don't hear about hugely often. It's not often in the news, but it's quite shocking that they are saying that every single member of the Japanese sumo wrestling community, professional wrestling community, is going to be questioned. Now, that includes current wrestlers and also veterans, so elders.
I'd like to see how this all unravels, to be honest with you. I'd like to see how they do go about, like you say, to interview all of them. It's... Yeah, I'd like to see how that's going to work out. I really, really would.
Yeah, me too. I think we're about to take a little break, and then we're going to be talking to a very lovely guest. Just to update you that the Six Nations, the coverage is being shared between the BBC and ITV. So do check your listings and make sure that you're tuning in for the games.
Now, we won't take a break quite yet. We have already mentioned, I just said then, with the Six Nations. So I think it's time we probably spoke about it a little bit more with someone else. Let's get on the phone lines right now. Andrea Massey on the phone. Hello, Andrea. Welcome to Pitch Talk.
Hi, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Really looking forward to this weekend's fixtures.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be very exciting.
Well, Andrea, let's look at the Six Nations. Let's talk about, first of all, last weekend's game. What did you think of Italy v England? Obviously, Italy 15, England 46. Did you think our team lived up to the hype and expectations?
Well, I think Italy played very well. And I think the score was a bit unfair. I mean, they played at their best potential. And unfortunately, the score was a bit unfair, I think.
What are you anticipating this weekend? Because, of course, Italy will be taking on... Who is it they're taking on this weekend? I actually can't remember.
We will get the fixtures up. Yeah, let's talk... Sorry, carry on, Olivia.
Yeah, what are your predictions for this weekend's games?
I'm expecting a tough game against Ireland. The Italians, they spent lots of energy against England, and obviously playing on Sunday, the Italians have one less day to recover. Mm-hmm. So and then also the Irish team has been criticised for their attack, so I'm expecting. I'm expecting them to put lots of emphasis on their attack. So I'm expecting a tough one for the Italians.
And as an ex-international player yourself, what's it like for the players? Is it a huge amount of stress having these games so close together?
Yeah, obviously there's a pressure physically and also mentally. But yeah, this is the high level. This is the international level. And... but yeah, they are training well. They are well prepared, well coached, and hopefully they can produce a good performance.
Absolutely. Now, you played yourself for Italy and also for London Wasps. How does that work when you end up facing essentially your teammates as suddenly the opposition?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Obviously, playing against teammates, you know the strength and the weakness of the players you play against. But it's exciting.
Now, Andrea, let's focus more on you and what you're up to now since leaving Wasps. You returned to the club as academy coach. What was that like for you? You had an enforced retirement in 2016. So what was it like for you to come back and help these young players through that transition process as they embarked on their career in professional rugby? What's that like for you on that side of things?
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can transfer my experience to young players and see them achieving their goals, it's absolutely fantastic. And it's an honour, it's a privilege for me, yeah.
Well, it's a privilege for us, really, because you are one of Italy's most celebrated players. In March 2011, you were named the Six Nations Player of the Championship because you scored Italy's late try in their first ever championship win against France. How was that?
Yeah, it was...
I mean, obviously, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the win was amazing. We had a very positive Six Nations in 2011. I I managed to play quite well against France, and I've been very, very lucky to be voted players of the tournament. Yeah.
Because, of course, Italy have had a bit of a resurgence, and perhaps 2011, that was kind of the turning point, and they were taken a lot more as a proper threat. What do you think that that changed? Was it the coaching or different players? How did Italy start to become so much more a competitive rugby team?
The 2011 probably was the... We had a really tight group of players playing within France and UK. So we had a very experienced team, and this cycle started probably in 2011 and ended 2013, which was our best Six Nations ever. We won against France and Ireland that season. So yeah, it's been a very positive cycle, and again we had a really, really tight group of players, and this is probably what is lacking at the moment. The Italians, they have a talented group of players, but they have a lacking of experience at the moment. But yeah, they are working extremely well. They putting solid bases, and the future looks brighter. Looks exciting.
Good. Well, we are really excited to see the game. One quick question before we let you go: who is your player of the moment? Who are you excited seeing coming up through the ranks in Italy's team?
Yeah, I think Minozzi, the Italian fullback. He's very young, he's just 21, but he's an exciting player to watch. He has an incredible footwork, and what I like from him is that he's not scared at all, he's not shy, even at the biggest stages. So, Minozzi is one of the brightest talent coming through in Italy.
Brilliant.
Yeah, thank you so much, Andrea Messi. I hope you have a wonderful weekend watching the Six Nations. And
thanks.
Do come back and talk to us again very, very soon.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for
bye.
Having me.
Thank you, ciao.
Thank you, bye-bye, ciao.
I got my Italian
you
words
got it in there.
There.
You got it in there. That's Andrea Messi there talking to us.
What a lovely man.
He's very charming.
Yeah.
So smooth. So such smooth talkers, the Italians,
wowed
aren't they?
Wow, over. They true,
stunned into
true.
Silence.
Very true. Oh, just to let you know as well, the fixtures for this weekend, we've got Ireland, Italy. That's at 2:15. And then England, Wales. That's at 4:45 on Saturday. Sunday is Scotland v France. And that's at 3:00.
Yes, you know, I knew that Italy were playing Ireland. I've been gabbing on about it. I blame the Italian accent. I was bowled over.
Yeah.
I was speechless. I frankly forgot everything I wanted to ask.
I think that was brilliant. It was really good. Thank you so much for talking to us there,
thank
Andrea.
You.
Massey. Now, we were touching on the 2018 Winter Olympics. And snowboarder Katie Ormerod is out of the Winter Olympics after suffering a fractured heel in training. The 20-year-old Bridgehouse rider sustained a minor fractured wrist on Wednesday's first day of slope-style training, but returned yesterday intent on competing. However, the British Olympic Association have announced that her games were over before they had begun, and she faces surgery.
I know, what a shame. She put up on her Instagram stories a picture Ooh. Of the bone with a couple of pins in it. So I think she has already had this surgery, just Ooh. Looking through the reports here. I think it's such a shame because she is a young athlete with so much going for her, and she was super, super excited about these Winter Olympics, and she has been blighted by injury before. So
yeah, let's listen to what she had to say a bit earlier on.
You've had a few injuries.
Yeah.
But that's part and parcel, isn't it, of snowboarding, really. When we came out to watch you in Sierra Nevada, like, what happened there?
Yeah, it was the World Champs, and I just dropped in for the first run of the second training day and just got the speed, like, completely wrong and caught my heel edge on the landing and just went smack and, yeah, ended up breaking my back, which was not that cool.
I love that you're laughing in the same sentence yeah. that you're saying I broke my back.
I know, it's crazy, but, yeah, luckily it was, like, really minor.
That's so sad.
I know. So back then that was quite a minor injury, but of course this one is quite a serious injury. Mm. She persevered. Hats off to her. She continued training with her broken wrist or her fractured wrist.
It's a different way of being, isn't it, when you're a professional athlete? Yeah, like the rest of us would.
I'm assuming it's a different mindset, because I would be in a crumbled fetal position on the floor if I broke my wrist. But she took to Instagram and she said, after dreaming of competing at the Olympics for years, I finally got there and received the most bad luck I've ever had. I severely broke my heel into two pieces. Words can't describe how gutted I am, but thank you to everyone for your support and kind words. And little legend finished off by saying, a massive good luck to my teammates competing this weekend. You guys better kill it.
Do you know what, again, that shows you how I could not be an athlete, because if I was out of the tournament, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, I'll be other teammates.
First flight home, yes. I'm out of here,
I'm over it. We will be talking loads, obviously, as well next week about the Winter Olympics, but the one last thing I want to say very, very quickly is to Nigeria's women's bobsleigh team, who are making history. This is such an amazing story, the first Nigerians and the first African sled to compete at a Winter Olympics. That's Sien Adegun Ngozi Onwuma and Akwama Omega.
Really hope those names are right, but that was a jolly good effort, Rachel.
Yeah.
I've
been following them for a little while, and I think it's just an amazing story. It's very, obviously, it's a modern day cool runnings. So we'll find out more and we'll see how well they do as well. So that's my favourite story so far from the Winter Olympics.
Well, my favourite story so far, I'm just reading it right now. There's been... it's all about North Korea and South Korea. And in this ceremony... the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and US Vice President Mike Pence were sat seats away in the same VIP booth, and they were watching an extraordinary handshake taking place. It's not quite saying exactly who it was who was shaking the hands. This is coming in right now, but it seems that these Winter Olympics might well be bridging something of a gap between countries where we previously, politics and diplomacy had failed.
Yeah, I think it's going to be... so far, I think it's starting off on a positive note and a positive footing. It'll be very interesting to see what I think this next week has in store for the Winter Olympics. Now, I think we're going to take a little breather. Mm-hmm. We'll be back in a couple of minutes before we do get our second guest on. I popped down to the Ultimate Boxer brand launch event on Monday. Brilliant event. And we have a little package for you. I spoke to Ricky Hatton, Paulie Malignaggi, and Anthony Crawler. So let's have a little listen.
Hi, I'm Rachel Downing for Pitch Talk on FUBA Radio, and we're here at the official launch of Ultimate Boxer, a landmark moment in boxing, and we have a ringside seat. Paulie Malignaggi, let's first of all start with Ultimate Boxer. Why is it so important for you to personally get involved with this?
A couple of reasons. One of the reasons, obviously, I'm a fan of the sport of boxing, and I think, in order to keep it popular, you have to market it to the young viewers without offending the core audience as well. So I think you always have to find creative new ways to not lose your core audience, but at the same time branch out to a new audience.
Anthony Crawler, do you think we'll see more Ultimate Boxer events like this in the future? Do you think more people are going to take a risk?
Long term, if they see what a success this can be, and this takes off, which I believe it will be, then it always gives other people, other competitors, you know what, we're going to give that a go. We can try and do that better. And again, I'm a fan of that, because it gets more fighters work, and the more fighters that get work, it's better for the boxing. The more boxing events, more people watching boxing as a fan. As a student of boxing, I'm happy.
Ricky, well, let's talk about Ultimate Boxer. What drew you in to be part of this new era?
I think we've all got to move with it, with the times. I mean, I've always said my proudest achievement was my fan base, and I had my fan base before social media even kicked on, to be honest with you. And I think to myself, how many fans would have had if I'd have been in the position that some of these youngsters are going to be in when they go in this. I think it's a great platform. I mean, normally to get an opportunity like this to be in such a big shop window like social media and what this is going to do, I think some people don't always get the opportunities. You have to sometimes go to the Olympic Games to get a contract or something in boxing. But no, this could obviously be the platform to lead these youngsters that might not get the opportunity to big and better things. Yeah.
I read somewhere that you were thinking about coming out of retirement and maybe fight Rio Ferdinand. Is this something you would actually seriously do?
No, not
please.
Somebody asked me that, and I said it jokingly, and then everyone took it serious. Rio probably wouldn't give the weight away to me. That's it. At the minute.
There you go. That was our package from the Ultimate Boxer event at the start of this week that I attended. So I fancy something a little bit different, don't you, Olivia?
I do, always, Rachel.
Always. We like to shake things up a bit. So let's welcome into the studio Sarah Hunt, yoga teacher and a founder of Disco Yoga.
Woo!
Oh, sorry.
Look, come on, let's
we're
do
going
it again.
With the clap.
We need to get a clap thing going
hey.
On. We need to get the clap back.
Welcome to the studio, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
So excited to have you here. We really, really are. Now, for people thinking, well, what's going on? What's happening? Could you introduce yourself to the nation, please?
Yes. Well, I'm Sarah Hunt, and I'm co-founder of Disco Yoga. So do you want me to go on about disco yoga?
Yes, absolutely.
Sounds amazing. Sounds incredible.
So yes, we've taken regular yoga, added a live DJ, who's my business partner, Rosie, DJ Darlow, and we do it weekly in throughout London, festivals, and it's a yoga class but to live music.
So
so many
okay,
questions.
So, literally, there are questions just exploding in my mind.
Yeah.
When I think of yoga,
yeah.
I think of the chakras and the
yeah
the 15 what are they called, the movements, warrior and
yeah.
salutation.
Yeah.
Are you still doing all that kind of thing?
Yes, but we just add some disco grooves throughout.
So, but it's fast.
Yeah.
So do you have to be really good at yoga to
no,
do it?
We get lots of newcomers.
Wow.
Yeah.
It just sounds brilliant.
I mean, I think, Rachel, you'd be amazing at this. I have the coordination of a fish.
You'll
so
be fine.
I'd have, like, it'd That's be a bit hilarious. Like watching a child play Twister or a very drunk adult play Twister.
It says here, you start each class with the option to glitter up.
Yes. So people arrive 15 to 20 minutes early. We have a whole glitter station with gems and lots of cool glitter. So people come either as groups, friends, whatever, or just on their own.
Yeah.
And if they come on their own, they usually end up meeting people because we have a drink after. And yeah, it's the full package.
This,
so yeah,
this is the real exercise for people who don't really want to feel like they're exercising.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So people leave and think, oh, I've had a night out, but a workout, and I didn't even know I was.
So it's brilliant. And can I just, I've got here the cocktail sample list. I love the names of them. I've got Kale and the Gang, Disco Inferno, It's Raining Zen.
Yes.
Brilliant. Sister Sledgehammer, Blame It on the Blueberry.
I mean, I do.
Yeah. Nam Iced Tea, Tequila Sun. Salutation.
Salutation.
Thanks, babe. Hot stuff and going Coco Down and Acapulco.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So after the class, they all get a cocktail or a mocktail.
Oh my God, that's so brilliant. So how did it all start for you? It was yoga your first love? Is this how it all started?
Yeah. So I was a yoga teacher, a regular yoga teacher doing the chill chakra kind of yoga. And but also still love dancing and going out. And I always felt like there was a chance to blend it.
Mm.
So I started about 4 years ago just mixing some soft songs and starting to introduce more upbeat music just to friends. And then I ran into Rosie and she's like, let's do it together. And then
such a cool idea.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the main things, well, speaking from personal experience, A, I don't have any flexibility, but B, the main thing that puts me off yoga is boredom.
Yeah.
Because I have a terrible attention threshold, and if I try and do something, unless it's sort of challenging me or I feel like I'm moving, I have the kind of brain that's like, nah, stop. Yeah. I'm no good at that. I'll move on. So actually combining yoga with a bit of music, I feel like you could lose yourself there.
I think it's a brilliant idea.
You definitely do. And people still get the same experience as you would if you were, you know, meditating or doing something slow. Because the main thing is to get you to tune out of the busyness of your life and the stress of your life.
That's so true.
Now,
it is.
I've done a couple of yoga classes recently where they've had very much an emphasis on external, how do I describe this? senses is a good word.
Yeah.
would be the obvious word. So not just what you can hear and what you can see, but other things that can affect you, like the beat of the music and the tempo, and then of course the light or how hot the room is, kind of things that you subconsciously you might register and think, yep, that feels different, but actually it's designed to mimic the relaxation process that your body goes through when it's entering sleep or a really relaxed phase. Is that something that you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the beats and within the music and the class, everybody's just kind of losing themselves within it. Mm-hmm. And often there's songs that they know, you know, all the classic Staying Alive songs and things like that.
I'm just loving this idea.
I need to see yoga to Staying Alive.
Yeah. And then we have an impromptu dance party throughout the class, depending on when a good song is up and everybody's energy is up. And then afterwards, we get them to just pause and feel and process it all, you know, with eyes closed, even standing up or lying down. And everybody, you really get to experience what it's like to have your cells vibrating.
I'm just enamoured by this. I really am. So
and we've got disco balls all over the room, too.
Of course you have, because it's a disco.
If we all want to take a little trip down to disco yoga, where do we find you? You said you pop up all over London. Do you have a home?
Yeah, our home is Trapeze in Old Street area. Yeah. Trapeze Bar on Great Eastern Street. So that's every Tuesday at 7:30. Mm-hmm. And then we do it once a month in Peckham as well, at the Prince of Peckham, at the beginning of the month on a Wednesday. And then we do loads of festivals, too, in corporate and privates.
So which festivals can we see you at this year?
So last year we did Bestival, Isle of Wight, Latitude and Blissfields.
Brilliant.
And we're just in the works of planning all that now, so nothing 100%, but we're about to announce it soon.
I can see you at Bestival. I have to say, when I went to Bestival, I had the best and worst experience, because I'd arrived in the Isle of Wight, because it was when it was in the Isle of Wight, and I'd assumed that the weather on the island would be the same as the mainland, and it wasn't raining, so I didn't take wellies, so it was a bit diabolical to begin with. But once you realised I'm going to get wet and muddy, it was fine.
Yeah,
and
we've
there was a lot of glitter.
Yeah, we had people doing yoga in the mud. We did 15 shows at Bestival. One was on the top of the HMS Bestival.
It
was amazing. We had a field of people doing it. It was great.
And your classes, how many people normally come to your classes?
In the trapeze one, that's about fits about 40.
Oh my, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's a great vibe. Everybody, it's just nice to see a bunch of strangers all come together and dance and sing and have fun. Yeah.
Well, I'm sold. I don't know about you. I'm totally sold.
We got to get you down.
Yeah. Let's just briefly touch on the fitness aspect of yoga. Is this designed to be a workout or is it more fun?
Yeah, the main thing that I get people coming up to me after saying is, I had no idea that it was going to be an actual workout too.
Yeah.
So we now have a hashtag sweat glitter.
Oh, like that.
But what people usually also say is, I didn't really realize it was hard as I was going along, and afterwards I realized I was out of breath. So it's a little trick way to get
and
people.
And also, as part of your training, you did holistic nutrition.
Yeah.
What exactly is holistic nutrition?
Holistic nutrition is using food to heal you if you have an ailment, or if you just want to create more energy within your body or yourself, rather than take a pill or just go to the doctor or go into surgery. Yeah. So it's using food to just as a preventative way of keeping healthy and alive, or if you've got a specific ailment.
So is this things like how the gut is very linked to your emotions?
That's part of it. Yeah. There's many branches of it, but yeah.
Because
that's
I feel like it's becoming increasingly fashionable to really tune into your body and what your body's trying to say, rather than just, as you say, taking a pill. We're becoming a little bit wiser. If someone was trying to get into eating a bit more holistically, what would they? Where do you start with this?
I think the easiest way is with smoothies in the morning or any time in the day.
Okay.
Because you can just, you know, Nutribullets in any sort of blender. You just put fruit and veg in it, and then suddenly you've got a big dose of nutrition in one cup.
And talk to me about kefir. Do you know what kefir is?
That's not my specialty.
I was told the other day by a nutritionist that I absolutely had to have kefir. So I went out, bought a thing of kefir. Then I realised that it said you have to leave it for 24 hours before you can
kefir.
Eat it.
I don't understand.
I don't know.
Is it a food? Is it?
I think it's a probiotic.
Yeah, probiotic. Yeah, it's a natural probiotic, like natural apple cider vinegar and things.
Is that what that is?
They're all things that have been, naturally. Yeah. So it just helps with gut, like even natural yogurts and things like that are the same, very similar.
Because it's all kind of linked, isn't it?
It is.
Our gut health and our emotions. And I also, I think back in December, we discussed that I did a very emotional yoga class once.
And
the teacher told me that because we're working on our hips, we were likely to feel emotional later, which I thought was a load of
crap.
Yeah.
And then I was lying in bed thinking, I don't understand. Yeah. And then I was like, oh my God, she told me this would happen.
And again, it's genius. The benefits and the effects, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like saying, you know, I have a gut feeling that that was going to happen. You know, when we experience something,
I never thought about that.
Whether it's excitement or fear, we feel it in our stomach.
And we do. We go to clutch our stomach or our heart, and mm-hmm. wow.
So we do lots of heart openers in disco yoga, like, you know, shining through. Yeah.
Oh, so if someone isn't very fit, can they still join in?
Oh, definitely. Usually we get about half of the class as complete beginners.
What kind of thing do people wear?
So some people just wear their normal gym kit or just like leggings and a shirt. Other people come completely suited out in cat suits and
I feel like
my leggings might work quite well.
I saw your leggings.
Can't get my leg up high enough, but they are there. If you can imagine, dear listeners, they are shiny red.
They're like a glitter ball for the legs.
Unflexible. They are like a glitter ball for the legs. I've literally strewn myself in liquid glitter just for you.
So where would you like to see, say, the concept of disco yoga go in the future, so in the next few years? Would you like to see it grow even more? Would you add more styles to this?
Yeah, well, what we're planning on doing is just expanding all over the UK and possibly beyond, because it's brought so many people to yoga that wouldn't normally come. Mm. And that's why I originally started it. All my friends who came, I said, they're all the ones, I'm never going to do yoga. Yes, and we got them in. I got them in.
The haters.
And then they said, okay, I could do this one.
So that's what it is, isn't it? It's that, it's quite scary, the idea of like going to yoga if you're not used to it.
You know what I think it is? It's the number of people who are good at sport or good at fitness, and they go to the gym, and they tend to be really high achievers, and they're very driven and maybe a bit of a perfectionist, and then they have this thing thrown in their face which is going to stare them straight on, and they're going to have to admit to themselves, I'm not very good at that. Mm-hmm. And I think many people in human nature, if you're not very good at something, you give it up immediately. But yoga seems to be one of those things that you do have to practice it. And your body does need to get used to it, because we haven't done it. We haven't bent that way. Our guest last week, was talking all about how children can move and babies have this amazing flexibility. And we lose it. So it's like you're almost relearning.
Yeah, you're starting again, aren't you? You're really teaching your body like what it should be doing.
Yeah.
So exciting.
And we take the competitive side out of it, naturally, because if people are in balance poses and they're starting to fall, we just say, just let yourself have a dance instead.
Dance out.
That's reassuring.
Shake it out.
Yeah, shake it out.
It's like when you style out a fall, go to run across the traffic lights and they go to green anyway, and you just style it out into a slide.
Is it both men and women as well?
Yeah, definitely.
God, that's it. We are sold. We're to bring the team over.
Bring the crew.
We'll be there.
We might,
Rachel and I might don some more shiny pants and do a little video.
I'd be well up for that.
Brilliant.
Totally up for that. Yeah, I'll be there. We'll be literally walking human glitter ball. Well, look, Sarah Hunt, thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And you're saying there are trapeze in Old Street.
That's on Tuesdays.
On Tuesdays. Yep. And then Peckham once a month.
On Wednesday. The first Wednesday of the month.
First Wednesday of every month. Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Round of applause, please, for Sarah Hunt.
Woo!
So we're getting better at this.
Why am I wooing?
We're getting better. Wooing is always good. Right. We are going to take a very short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll have a lot more on health and fitness after this.
Research has shown that yes, going on social media too long can lead to negative feelings about the self. This is because on social media, you have an oversaturation of everyone's achievements and successes without any context as to how they even got there. Your own progress, which you obviously have lots of context about, seems bleak in comparison. This type of virtual comparison leads to real feelings of an inadequacy and leaves you feeling even more pressured, as if we didn't have enough to begin with. One of the most thought-provoking things is that maybe we shouldn't be trying to win at all. It's been shown that we can only have up to 150 successful, stable social relationships. And I know most of us have way more than that on Facebook alone. Recently, Asena O'Neill, an 18-year-old Instagram celebrity, said no to social media, quit social media, and said goodbye to her 500,000 followers. Asena made a video detailing her own experience with social media fame and how empty and meaningless it turned out to be. She grew up idolizing other girls and wanted to be as thin, pretty, famous as them. But when she got there, she details how she felt so empty and low about herself as a person. This demonstrates to me that even though we're able to have these accomplishments, that yeah, maybe we are able to get that follow count or have that nice hair and get those good grades and have everyone think we're the best, that those things don't really make us who we are. At the end of the day, they aren't what make our life meaningful or fulfilling.
Now that's a clip of Samir Khan from the University of British Columbia. And that takes us very swiftly, very nicely, very elegantly into our fitness section.
Yes, it does indeed.
Hey, that's good.
Oh, how is it taking us like 2 months to realise that? Do you reckon someone else has been doing that and just laughing at us while we're not
thinking
about it?
Seriously, Olivia, what is wrong
with us? I mean, I'm
going
to go with seriously... Well, what's wrong with you? yes, in our fitness section, we are going to discuss the truth behind fitness Instagrammers' bodies and also the new sexy body inspo that we're all going to be looking at, apparently. This is according to research from the University of Missouri, Kansas City, which is saying that beauty ideals are changing, with increasing emphasis now being placed on bodies that are fit, toned, muscular, and healthy. So we're all kind of saying the same thing, but sometimes it goes a little bit too far.
Yes, it's. And by the way, if you have just joined us and you were unsure of that clip that we just played, it was of Samir Khan from the University of British Columbia. Yes, so are we? Let's start with then the truth behind Instagrammers' bodies.
Yes, so this is all based on an article by Rachel Hosey, who is at Rachel_Hosey, if you do want to follow her on Instagram. And she says, she's basically talking about... it's almost a bit of a body dysmorphia, whereby she is showing pictures of her body, but they're not actually quite truthful. So in the same way as there was quite a lot... First time when Facetune came out, there was an awful lot of backlash, even people like Beyonce, because when they were scooching in their waists, they inadvertently were scooching in all the trees.
Is that
what Facetune does? Yeah, so it's got a... like a reshape thing, so you can make yourself all streamlined and wonderful, which is great if you're stood on a plain background. But if you have any vertical lines anywhere else in the picture, they'll warp in with you. It's a bit like the reverse of that, because this fitness Instagrammer is saying that essentially these pictures of her that would be published on social media, in magazines, they were essentially a pile of rubbish. She says...
It's very brave of her to come out and
say
that.
It is very brave. I suspect this is probably part of the therapy process, getting back to reality. Sorry, I got that wrong. That was the name of the lady writing the article. Her name is Anna Rhodes. She's from St. Albans, and she has revealed that despite how strong she looked in the photos from a professional shoot, she was, in fact, emaciated and exhausted at the time. And her actual Instagram comment says that... Someone recently said to me, I want to get as lean as you were in your PT photo shoot. And to be honest, I didn't feel entirely comfortable. These images are with professional lighting, a lot of fake tan, tons of makeup, good posing, and a physique that looked that way from extreme dieting. Now, I think this is a big problem that we are actually facing in this industry, because although we are all trying to champion a really healthy body image, it can be taken too far. And actually... the images that we're pushing up and that we're trying to say are the epitome of health and hashtag fitspo, an awful lot of them in reality are people who are deeply, deeply unwell.
Because you obviously are, I would say, a fitness influencer. Do you feel that pressure? Do you feel a lot of pressure to look a certain way? Or is it something that you're okay about?
As with so many things in this industry, I have learned not to compare myself. And I'm probably very lucky.
That's
because,
an amazing way to be.
Well, I grew up with an identical twin sister. So I had to be very blinkered. And in order to survive as a girl growing up with an identical clone of yourself, you have to be purely looking at yourself and not comparing yourself to other people. So I'm quite lucky in that I practiced that from a really young age. But there are occasions where I'll feel myself slip into a more negative mindset, and I've had those horrible mindsets before. I think a lot of us growing up, age 16 17 18,
horrible time, actually.
Struggled with food and issues around body weight and what to eat and how they look in comparison to their peers. And I rarely feel it, but I did feel it. I won't say where. There was a gym launch that I went, or a gym event I went to recently, and normally at a gym event I feel quite confident, pretty good, and I looked around and I'm pretty sure that the people at said gym, they can only have been models. Not a single one of them looked my size or bigger. everyone was so unbelievably tiny, yet did have a lot of muscle. So they're obviously working out, so I get that. But it's this extreme dieting that just because we're putting it onto people who work out, actually, that's even more unhealthy.
Yeah,
we should be trying to project these positive images of how a human body can look. Yes, be the best you can be, but don't starve yourself. Don't, as a position, as an influencer, someone who someone else is going to look up to, and probably someone younger than you is going to look up to, I think we really do have a responsibility to be accurately portraying what we look like in real life.
I totally agree. And can you imagine us growing up with Instagram? I didn't grow up with any of this, and I'm so grateful that I didn't have that.
I do think about that occasionally, because I know there was a lot of teasing and bullying when I grew up. But actual social media, it's an absolute minefield. And I can remember my parents being worried about MSN Messenger, or there were all these horror stories about chat rooms. You had what?
A beeper. Do you not remember?
You didn't.
I had a beeper.
You had a pager?
Yeah. The little, like, oh, excuse me, who's
that? I thought they were all for American drug dealers.
Well, in my spare time, Miss Cox. Yeah. And then if I had to call my dad, I'd go to the little payphone with my 10p in there. Yeah, I'm old.
I did not have a pager. I had a
penny farthing. I didn't have a penny.
I had a Nokia, which was not on contract. It was. I had several Nokias, actually.
Good phones,
play
though.
Snake.
Good phones, reliable.
Did not break.
Reliable.
I'll say that. Mm-hmm. And they, dad would put £10 credit on or something.
Good old dad.
But I was so worried about running out of credit that I would one ringer my mother. I wouldn't even let her pick up because that would charge me 2p because the connection fee was 2p, and then it was like 10p a minute. So I'd hang up. So poor mum must have gone through about 3 years of my sister and I ringing frantically, call me back, or not even allowing her to pick it up so that she could call back. Yeah. I'm not really sure how we got from fitness models to that,
Nokia.
But I am mum. I'm deeply sorry.
Yes, I do apologize.
I really hope you didn't feel unloved. I do love you.
But please call me back. Now, you've also got here the new sexy body.
So that
scares me.
I know. But that is actually, I mean, it's a similar principle. It's come through saying that. So, I mean, there are trends, and you can see them in cartoons, in artwork, in celebrities. Everybody, every age we go through, there's a different sexy body. So back in Marilyn Monroe's era, Betty Boop, it was very curvy, hourglass figure. Marilyn Monroe was a size 12.
Yeah.
This sort of thing. Then we fast forward to the supermodels, and suddenly that heroin chic, waif-like model became very, very fashionable. And Kate Moss was horrifyingly skinny, I would say, in her real prime. She was so young, and she was beautiful, but she was scary to look at.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what followed then was a trend where sexy was considered to be super skinny, and this was,
you know, if you're naturally like that, great. It's just if you're not naturally like that, then that's where the problem is.
It's like, okay, so I used to spend an hour every day straightening my hair to within an inch of its existence until finally I realised, why don't I just work with what I've got rather than trying to create something I haven't got?
But then that's probably age as well, I think.
Yeah, that's age and experience. And probably my arm's getting a bit tired.
Yeah, that's true.
I actually once strongly considered getting an undercut, because I've got about three people's worth of hair. And I thought, if I just shave out this middle portion.
You do have a good mane.
I do. And I used to go to the hairdressers and like slide them a bit of extra cash to be like, thin it out. Because mum obviously hated it when I destroyed my lovely hair. But yeah, I did quite a good job of destroying it. Anyway, I digress. What I wanted to say was that the new beauty standard is someone who is fit, toned, muscular and healthy.
It's, do you know what? That's great if it's healthy. If not people becoming fixated on being really toned and this and that. I've just got a whole, I don't know, I find too much on, too many pictures of all these fitspo people. It's just, I think because I'm fully aware of the kind of the dangerous side of what fixating on how you look can do to you. But you know what? I'm the firm believer in looking at a picture of a skinny girl doesn't give you an eating disorder. Looking at models going down a catwalk doesn't give you an eating disorder. One doesn't go with the other. It's a mental problem. But it, even if you don't have that
to see all the time, all these unrealistic, and also, you know, people that have that amazing toned body, they're paid to look like that. Mm. It's what's their job, isn't it? Someone's doing a 9 to 5 can't look like that because they don't have the time.
Well, quite right. I mean, I personally cannot work out in the morning. If I try and set my alarm to get out of bed, just nowhere in hell. At the same time, I also, by the time it gets dark in the evening, I cannot do a workout. Luckily, I don't have a proper job, so I can do a workout right slap bang in the middle of the day. And quite frankly, I'm very grateful for it. But Rachel, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Married as you are, mm-hmm. would you do a workout with Si?
Do you know what? There's been a few times we've been on holiday and I've dragged him to the gym, and then I will look at him, he'll look at me, and we'll judge each other because we're like, wow, were those people away on holiday?
Do you think that it encourages you, and or do you think that
it would encourage
does that
me.
Wear off at the beginning when you no longer? I mean, I read somewhere yesterday that it takes 6 months for couples to fart in front of each other. Do you think once that's happened, do you think you no longer
in front of my friends?
Really?
I don't like, don't like anything to do with toilet.
I love toilet humour.
No.
Producer Abby is nodding. I'm glad. I'm not the only freak in the studio. Rachel has gone almost the same colour as her hair and is wagging her finger furiously at the mic.
No.
But I do wonder whether, because when I'm in the early stage of a relationship, I love to work out. So I often, and I often like to think that I'm definitely fitter than whoever I'm dating. So I'll drag them out for a run. And sometimes it will push me to go a little bit further because I'm too mortally embarrassed to have backed myself so wholeheartedly. Yes. But then once I get a bit more comfortable, the brat in me decides to rear its head and I can't be asked to try really hard anymore. So I just sort of chill. And the number of times my current partner and I, sorry, that was a horrible way of saying it, my boyfriend, Giovanni, the one at the
Friday's
moment,
partner.
When Giovanni, he actually has banned me from going for runs with him because I get so competitive that I end up having a sulk or I'll get angry and I create some sort of stupid argument. He will end up running home and I'm like, sulking at the back thinking I don't want to run, but I also don't want to walk because it's really cold, but please wait for me, but don't because I'm really angry that you're faster than me, you stole my sport.
It's a complex,
it's actually hurting my head just thinking about it.
I think that's amazing. Do you know what though, actually saying that, when I work out I like to work out on my own. I'm not very chatty when I work out.
You know those people who you go to put your headphones in when you're going to go for a run and they're like, oh, are we listening to music? I thought we were going to chat.
Really?
Sorry, how slow are you going to run if you can chat?
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. And also, I just like to stay focused because if I stop for a minute, that's it. I'm not going to carry on.
No.
If you get me in a gym, don't try to get me out the gym. Let's put it that way.
An obsessive personality?
Yeah.
This is all coming because new research from personalised health and fitness programme 8Fit has discovered that over a third of people find training with a partner is the key to meeting their fitness goals. And as Valentine's Day approaches, why not celebrate with a fun new partnered workout to try with your other half? Now, I can think of many partnered workouts. Are we talking highbrow? Or lowbrow?
No? I mean, my brain is now in the gutter, so I don't know where we're going.
I recently did a shoot for Metro Fitness with a PT friend of mine, called Will McLaren, and we were doing workout moves you could do on a date, and it involved things like him standing there holding my legs and I would sit up. So in theory you could then kiss them.
Can I backtrack for 1 minute?
Yeah.
Workout moves you do on a date. Now I'm sorry, if I'm on a date, some dude wants to work out with me, I'm going home. I'm not going out on a date.
No, I reckon you're going to bed.
I am not going working out on a date.
Yes.
More to the point.
Yeah, but fitness is taking over. People are going for yoga meetings. They're going to Barry's boot camp rather than breakfast. Why not? Come on, Rachel.
I just wouldn't on a date. And on that note, we've got to say goodbye. You wouldn't though, would you? Take me for dinner, take me for wine, just don't take me for, I don't know,
take me for a run
stretch.
I'll be yours forever.
Well, Olivia, thank you so much. I've loved today.
Yeah,
it's
been fun.
Fast.
It has.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Mind blown, quite frankly, by disco yoga.
Oh my God, that's the best thing ever. Well, thank you for joining us. This has been Pitch Talk. Remember, you can tweet us at FUBA Radio or email us pitch@fubaradio.com.
home. Enjoy the rugby this weekend.
Oh, and the Winter Olympics.
And the start of the Winter Olympics. We'll have more about that on next Friday's show, kicking off from 5 p.m. as always. Have a marvellous, marvellous weekend. And don't forget to drop us drop us a letter, drop us a tweet. Do entertain
Rachel,
us.
It's time to go home. We're done.
We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
This past hour, you've been listening to Pitch Talk with Rachel Downey and Olivia Cotts. To listen again, simply go to foobarradio.com or our app, where this episode and all past episodes are free to stream or download. Send all questions, comments or queries to pitch@foobarradio.com or tweet @foobarradio.